listening to the Yes.
Check, 1, 2, yo.
You're now listening to
We're Articulate Podcast. Mariah Lachey and T-Von.
Welcome everybody again to another episode of Yes, We're Articulate. A very special episode today. I have Marcus Jones, a candidate for Henrico Board of Supervisors.
That's correct.
He is here to sit down with the city of Yes, We're Articulate and talk about his background, answer a few questions, and just enjoy the vibe that comes with being a guest at Yes, We're Articulate. So again, first off, man, just want to say thank you for taking the time out. I know it's campaign season. You could be out canvassing, knocking on doors, but for you to take the time out to come and sit down with us, we really appreciate it, and definitely want to say thank you at the onset of the interview.
No, thank you for the invite. You got me out of knocking doors and making phone calls, so you know I should be thanking you.
All right. anytime we can get you inside the air conditioner, I think that's
I will
good.
Take it.
Yeah, definitely, man. Tell us a little bit about yourself, man. For those people who may not be, as familiar with you, give us a little bit of your background, where you're from, and why you got into politics.
Wow. So I am from a small town in the southwest corner of the state called Bluefield. I actually grew up on the West Virginia side, but I went to school on the Virginia side and went to Marshall University, studied integrated science and technology. So, you know, politics was the farthest thing from my mind. I was a computer nerd, you know, grew up writing programs, and I did a lot of internet security stuff, web development stuff, and things like that. I got into politics differently than most folks do because I got into it from an advocacy standpoint. 11 years ago, I was actually diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. I remember it like it was yesterday, sitting in the doctor's office at 27 years old and having a neurologist come in and tell me that I had this chronic illness with no cure. And when that happens to you, you know, you go through that, okay, what's going to happen now, right? And after some different conversations with people and talking to my wife, I won't give you my stump speech, but talking to my wife and figuring out, hey, you know, this is something we've got to fight. This is something that we've got to go at, and it's not something to be afraid of. My way to fight back a disease that doesn't have a cure was to be an advocate, to go out and speak on behalf of folks that feel they don't have a voice, and get our government to put more money into medical research. So that's what I did, and that's how I got into politics. It was a journey, right? It's a journey going from going into an elected official's office and talking about issues that are, you know, near and dear to your heart, to feeling like, hey, there's not enough diversity of perspective in these rooms. I should not have to be explaining this time and time again. Maybe we should look at changing seats instead of trying to change minds. Yeah. And so, you know, if you're going to talk about it, you got to be about it, right? Like, if you're going to talk about it, you just can't say we need to do this, we need to do that. But then when somebody says, hey, why don't you go and run? You're like, nah, I got too much to do. You can't do that. You got to step up to the plate. And I tried to come in and fill that void.
Definitely. They always say all politics is local. What went into the decision to say, hey, I'm going to run for, you know, the Board of Supervisors versus maybe the House of Delegates or another role within government?
Right. So I started out, I was running for state senate, to be honest with you. And it was a long campaign. And to be quite honest, from a state legislature perspective, it's a game of money. You got to have the money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a first time candidate who doesn't come from a rich background, don't have parents with pockets overflowing, I was just outraged. And so I actually suspended my Senate campaign about a month or so before the primary in June. And I was all set to go home and coach T-ball and spend some time with my girls. Because when you run for political office, people, they try to tell you how it's going to be, but you don't know.
Right.
And right. I got three girls, 11, 6, and 4. And for the last, 2 years, I hadn't really seen much of them except for waking them up in the morning and putting them into bed in the evening, maybe rides home from the in-laws to the house. And so I was, after I suspended the campaign, Deborah Rodman got in the race. She was an elected official, and she was an awesome delegate, and I think she's going to make an awesome senator. And so I suspended the campaign. I endorsed her, and I'm hanging around at the house, and I'm literally talking to my wife about, can we get Zoe into T-ball? What can we do with Kaylee for the summer? And I started getting calls from people. And they said, Marcus, we're sorry it didn't work out for the Senate, but a lot of these same issues that you're passionate about on the state level have a local component. And we think you'd be a perfect candidate to run for Board of Supervisors. And I'm like, oh, thank you. You're just telling me this to make me feel better. But when you look at it, a lot of those issues are, they do have a local component. And I'll give you an example. Education funding, right? Yes, a percentage of education funding for K-12 comes from the state, but over 50% of the budget comes from the county, right? And your supervisor is the Board of Supervisors is the body that appropriates that money, right? So if you want to increase school funding, yes, you can write your legislator, but your county Board of Supervisors has to approve their part as well. A lot of transportation and infrastructure issues. We all know that the state takes care of the interstates and they take care of the big roads, but there's a huge component that the county has to take care of from a roads perspective, not only from a roads and bridges perspective, but your safety aspect with your traffic signals, your stop signs and all that kind of stuff. If you got one of those intersections like I used to have when I was growing up, where every other day you saw a wreck, right? And who do you call, or you might have gotten that wreck? Who do you call to say, hey, we need to study this? That's your supervisor, right? And so I think a lot of people think that the only way that you can contribute is, hey, let's run for state office. Your local elections are even more important in my mind, because those are the issues that affect you every single day.
Right.
Right. They, if you want your child's teacher to be paid more so that he or she doesn't exit the profession and go into a more lucrative job, then you need to talk to your supervisor, right? If you want certain policies and procedures implemented by your police department, you need to talk to your supervisor, not your delegate or state senator. Your supervisor, they're the ones that govern your local police force, right? So, and if you got that pothole that's caused you damage to your car and you want that thing filled, you better talk to your supervisor about that too. So that's kind of what got me around. And every day I find out something else that makes me even more excited and understand why it's more important than ever.
So what area of Henrico would you represent?
So I'm in the Tuckahoe district, which is basically from, the line of the James River over to roughly Three Chop Road, Ridgefield, and that type of area. It doesn't go all the way in the Short Pump, but it goes pretty far over in there. It's a part of Henrico that's mainly residential, but there's a lot of areas that can be redeveloped so we can make good use of the space. But I think what people have to understand, and what my approach will be, is yes, you're a supervisor and you're representing the Tuckahoe district, but that body of five makes decisions for the whole county. And in order for Henrico County to continue to grow, and prosper. We've got to, you know, work with our friends from, you know, Verina and Tyrone Nelson and Fairfield and Frank Thornton to attract businesses, not only in Short Pump. Lord knows I don't think we can build another thing out there. But also in Fairfield and Verina on the East End, so that we can continue to develop the county. Any business that locates out there, their taxes come into the general Henrico County budget.
Just like everybody
right?
else. Yeah.
Right. So we've got to start being champions for everybody across the county as well.
When you mentioned, you know, the full county, obviously, you know, when people think about Henrico, obviously, they almost think of it as two Henricos. You kind of touched on it a little bit when you think of, you know, the West End, the Short Pumps and so forth, and then the East End, when you think about Verina, Fairfield District and so forth. I know one of the things you're really hitting hard on your campaign is around education. What do you want to do to kind of hit back against that, the two different places? Because obviously people sometimes see the schools as different. And there's a disparity between the support and the overall level of education and facilities and so forth that you get in the West End versus the East End.
Well, I think one of the things that I know parents and people that are, you know, more involved in schools, you get mainly you think about your child's teacher, you think about the school building that your child's going to school in. You want to have an environment that is learning friendly, right? When a kid goes into a school, that school should reflect the value that education is important and that the people in the community care about us, so we should care about our education, right? And I think because that education budgets have stayed so stagnant over the past decade since the Great Recession, we haven't been able to pour it back into infrastructure and pour it back into teacher pay. Now, I will give credit where credit is due. You know, the Board of Supervisors the last couple of years, I know, has done some things where they're going to build a couple of new schools. They did a teacher pay raise last year, but I think it's just a start, right? If you look at statistics, teachers make, you know, considerably less than other professionals of the same education level, right? So in order to recruit and retain top talented teachers, we've got to pay them more. And we've also, and like I said, we also got to have to continue to put money into upgrading the infrastructure of schools. Kids shouldn't be in trailers, right? Like that just, you know, gives you the vibe when you go into that, like, they're putting us in a trailer, like, what's going on here, right?
And you're cut off from the rest of the
school, right? Yeah, right, yeah. Right,
and,
right.
And coming from somebody, I actually taught high school. That was my first job out of college, was teaching high school, and did it for 3 years. And the things you hit on, particularly pay, was the reason I didn't stay, because I looked 10 years down the road and like, 10 years, this is how much I would get as far as a raise. And if I could go out into a more professional setting and actually use my degree in corporate America or become an entrepreneur, I can make this much more.
But think about that. Think about that story, right, that you just touched on. An educated, motivated male, black male, right, in the school system. That they search for that every single day.
You need it.
Right?
You need it.
And they got you in there, but they couldn't keep you because you had to look inside yourself and think, okay, in 10 years when I have a family, how am I going to take care of them? That choice should not have to be made, right? And I'll relate it to a story of me personally. I remember it like it was yesterday, 17 years old. I was in, you know, that was before laptops and stuff. We had one computer in the house and it was in the dining room, plugged up to dial up, right? I'm on my computer. My dad comes in. And my dad and mom are teachers, but they really looked at for me to self-motivate, right? So my dad comes in and he says, you know, where are you thinking about going to school and what you want to major in? And I told him, I was like, Daddy, I'm 50-50. I said, I either want to be a teacher and a coach, because my dad was a coach, and he was actually a college basketball coach for about 8 or 9 years. I said, I either want to be a teacher or a coach, and I want to go into computer science. And he looked at me, and he says, well, I'll make this choice easy for you. You know, teachers, I'm a teacher, your mother's a teacher, we don't make any money. You need to go into computer science. And I was like, but I want to, you know, I want to teach and coach. He was like, well, I'll make it even easier for you. If you want to go into computer science, I'll send you to either West Virginia University or Marshall University, somewhere else out of town. If you want to be a teacher, you can go to Bluefield State. So he was pushing me out of going into education,
which both he and your mom were in. So, and right. What do you want more than to see your kids kind of emulate what you did?
Right.
You
know? And they saw, but they saw the writing on the wall, right? They saw, you know, back then my senior year in high school was the first year they did SOLs, and we were kind of like the guinea pigs and the benchmark, right? And so they seen, we don't get paid, you know, our profession is in the general public isn't valued as much as it should be. Mm-hmm. And I don't want you going into that was the message that I got, right? So sitting here in this room, there's two people who their first thoughts were they wanted to be teachers, but chose different paths because the environment that we foster, you know, isn't it. It just kind of, it doesn't lend itself to that, right? So that's why we circle back around. That's why we've got to address things like teacher pay. We've got to address a reward system that drives, that motivates teachers to want to go and stay into those tougher areas, right? You know, it might be easy to teach in a school, easier, I won't say easy because nothing's easy with teaching, right. Trust me. With two parents that are teachers, I get the stories all the time, but easier when kids have a nice stable background and they can they got parents that are really champions of education. But when you're working in an area where, you know, quite frankly, when I grew up, you know, it wasn't very cool to make good grades, right? Like kids, your classmates would call you out, oh, you're a nerd, or oh, you're this or that, right? So teachers in those type of areas where they can really make a difference, you know, need to be not only given applause and teach and awards, but actually be rewarded for going in that direction. So there's a lot you can do at a county level. And I know, you know, one thing people don't understand how the supervisors work with their school board counterparts, right? Like, we can appropriate the funds, but the school board member actually directs the school and how to use those funds, right? And I'm fortunate enough that I'm, you know, really close with our school board candidate, Melissa Dart. She's a real champion for kids, not only, you know, your standard average kid, but your kid with disabilities, your kids from disadvantaged backgrounds. I mean, she's gonna be a heck of a school board member, and I'm really proud to be on the ticket with her as well.
Yeah, definitely. I just love how you talk about education. I think it's so important. I've done a lot of volunteer work, particularly in those schools in the East End, and you have great teachers there, and just giving them the resources they need, giving that additional support would go a long way in keeping a lot of people there, teachers there, because I know there's plenty of teachers out there that are on that line, like, I'm gonna give it a chance another year or so, but I don't know what I'm gonna do. And they need, particularly when you talked about Black male teachers,
yep,
those role models, that may be the role model, that male role model that they don't have at home,
right,
they can get at school, and it becomes that much more important to keep and keep those people in the profession, man. So kudos to you for really having that as a top priority, you know, within what you want to do with the county. Obviously Henrico is growing, man. I think every time I go out to Short Pump, it's another another retailer, another development. I think they just want to move straight in from the mall to
they're literally taking up parking lots to put more stores in the parking lots of bigger shopping centers. It's crazy.
It's just growing like weeds. So what are some policies, some things that you want to put in place to really, you know, not stop, but really help Henrico kind of have that, the smart growth? You don't want to see that sprawl where, you know, you have things moving further and further out, you know, west, but then you have these areas within the county that need to be redeveloped as well. I mean, and I love what they've done with the right there, like in the Staples Mill area, right there, and some of the stuff they're talking about doing in Innsbruck. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
So I think, you know, as a supervisor, I look at part of the role as being a cheerleader, but for the county to recruit business and development, but also a partner once those organizations come in to make sure that not only are we just building for building's sake, but when we build something, do we have the next necessary infrastructure around it? Case in point, if a developer comes in and says we want to build a umpteen hundred unit building, we need to, as supervisors, we can't just rubber stamp it and say, oh, that development's all good, let's go. We've got to have a conversation with them and say, okay, how's this development gonna affect our schools, right? What physical infrastructure are we gonna have to build to make sure that it's not a 50-minute wait on Broad Street in Short Pump, that maybe we can cut that down a little bit, right? And not only that, those two things, but what's the environmental impact going to be of this development, right? Is there anything that we need to look out for and build into this plan before we start? So I think, you know, my approach is not only going to be an advocate to attract different growth or redevelopment, but it's also going to be a partner with those developers to make sure that when they're putting new things in, we're taking into account the community as a whole around it. And I think sometimes, you know, legislators at all levels get intoxicated with growth, right? Because growth brings more taxes, brings more people, brings more taxes, money in so you can do things. But I think you can't grow for growth's sake. You have to be smart about it. And also, you know, circling back to what I said earlier, we've got to work as supervisors for West End districts to champion the East End as well, right? Because, you know, I'm not sure we can pack much else over on the Three Chop and Tuckahoe, but there's a lot of opportunity, a lot of potential in our other districts that we can spread the wealth around the county and maybe come up with some plans to get businesses to look into those untapped areas as well. And again, that's what allows Henrico to keep its taxes low, right? If we attract more business to areas that are underdeveloped or undeveloped, then we can continue to keep taxes low, even though our population is going up and our needs as far as, you know, capital for to finance these different efforts, you know, goes up. So, you know, it's kind of a chicken and the egg thing.
Yeah, definitely. And we think about Henrico, obviously, you know, part of the Richmond, you know, Richmond area. And I think that interaction between the city and the county has all at times been contentious.
But it can't be that way, right? We're one area. We may as well.
Right. Right now we sit here, you know, I'm a resident of Chesterfield. And, you know, as I look at other comparable cities, when you think of Charlotte, you know, you think of some other cities that are very comparable to Richmond. Oftentimes what people talk about is that they kind of operate where the cities and counties work together, where they share schools and whatnot. Whereas here in Richmond, it's always us versus them, and we don't always work together. So what are some things that you want to see the county do to work better with Richmond and vice versa?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. One, I think continuing to build out the bus system. You know, I know that, you know, we do have the Pulse now, but the greater system itself continues. We need to add more routes on both ends of the county, because I know they cut some routes, you know, in order to build the Pulse to try to make it more economical. Right. And I think that was just a situation of crawl before we walk. There's no bad dog there. Right. That was just crawl before we walk. Right. But we got to continue to pay attention to that. And I'll tell you exactly why that's important. I want a personal care company. We have nurses aides that go into people's homes to allow our seniors and our folks with chronic illnesses and disabilities to stay in their homes and not have to go to facilities. It's hard work. It's not glamorous work, but there's not, you know, from a compensation perspective, you know, it's not like they're running out there rich, you know, being nurses aides. And a lot of them do use public transportation, and because they can't afford to live in the communities that they serve.
Right.
And having a more developed and built out bus system, not only to go to the city of Richmond, but to the East End and to Chesterfield. A lot of my aides that work with me, they live in Chesterfield, you know, or they live on the East End, or they live in the city. They don't live, my territory is on the West End. Very few of them live in the West End in the Short Pump area, right? And so that will benefit them, but not only, you know, selfishly, you know, for them, but that will benefit a lot of people who just don't want to drive downtown. I was talking to this guy, he works for a state government and he lives in Short Pump, and he wants to be able to ride the bus downtown, but he said the walk to a bus stop is so far, he would be either sweated through his clothes or frozen by the time he gets there. So we need to think about being more friendly to more public transportation, right? And allowing, you know, allow this to be a more, you know, kind of, you know, friendly, commuting friendly town.
Yeah.
But also just, you know, you see examples like the Math and Science Center that's being defunded by every locality. You see it with, you know, everybody loves to go to Squirrels games, and we haven't been able to build a new stadium because none of the localities really want to. They're like, well, you pay for it. No, you pay for it.
Right.
No, you pay. All of that stuff adds to our, you know, community here in the metro area. All that stuff makes us more attractive to people who want to move somewhere, but they don't want to go somewhere huge like Northern Virginia and DC. They want to have a small town feel, but they want to have the entertainment options and amenities of a bigger place. And those are things that you can't, one county or one locality isn't going to develop that, right? It's going to take an effort of everybody, right, to do that. And, you know, I think we have to keep that in mind as legislators. I don't think that you can say, okay, since it's not going to be built in my district, I'm not going to, you know, go with it, right? And I think that's been the mindset for a lot of years for a lot of legislators. If it's not positive for my area, then I'm going to poo-poo it a little bit when, you know, this is all of our area,
right?
Like, I usually don't go a day when I don't cross some type of county line or city line, right? Whether I'm in the city, in Goochland, in Hanover, in Chesterfield, I don't go a day in one locality if I'm in my car, right? So if you think about it from that perspective, we should govern like that.
Right, I agree 100%. I'm a baseball guy, so I get scared because the Squirrels have been here 10 years and we haven't, you know, we haven't seen any plan come to fruition on getting them a new facility. And at the same time, you see Ken Ryko starting to build, or thinking about building the big indoor facility for sports. And Chesterfield has the sportsplex and everything. So you have all these big complexes. And like you said, when people come into an area, my son plays travel baseball. We go to a city for a tournament. we're not staying 5 minutes from the park. We're oftentimes staying 20, 30 minutes away. So the influx into the economy is coming from all the areas. So if I have a tournament in Henrico, I may stay in Hanover. I may stay in Chesterfield. So it's refreshing to actually hear a candidate from the county actually talking about working with the city together, thinking about the metropolitan area and not so much just the county. And we understand that you know the county, that's their tax base is there. I understand that.
But people from the county get a lot of their entertainment
right
from the city, right? If you're not going downtown to the museum, if you're not going downtown to a Squirrels game, to a Redskins practice, if you're not going downtown to visit, you know, the state capitol and take in the history of Richmond, of the area, like a lot of our entertainment options, people from the county go to the city. Mm-hmm. A lot of the people from the city are coming out to the county to go shopping and enjoy some of the things that are in the county, right? Play in sports tournaments. I know there's been a huge push for different sports tourism related developments. I think that is awesome. And so people from the city and other counties come to Henrico for those type of things. And I think that's got to be our mindset, because that goes to quality of life, right? Where do you want to, what type of community do you really want to live in? And what do you want to, what options do you want to have? It's funny, my brother lives in Martinsburg, West Virginia, which is right around DC. And I'm always telling him, I'm like, you know, DC traffic, why you want to fight all that stuff? Why you want to live up to? And I was like, and you don't go anywhere anyway. Like, that's what I always tell him. I said, you don't even go anywhere. He said, yeah, but if I woke up one day and I wanted to go,
I could
go. And that's the mindset right that we have to have here in Richmond, in the metro area, right? In Henrico, in Richmond, in Hanover, in Chesterfield, it's, we've got to build up that type of, you know, environment so that we can keep people here and they don't get antsy and say, well, I want to move to Northern Virginia, or I want to move to Charlotte, or I want to move to Atlanta, right? We want to have everything here that we can to kind of dispel all of that before it gets started, right?
Definitely. So we've hit a lot on local, obviously, because you are running for local office, obviously. You know, obviously, the country's becoming more diverse. The county itself is becoming more and more diverse. What are some things you'd like to do, policies that you'd like to see in place to really reinforce and nurture that inclusion and diversity within the community?
Well, I think anytime you're in an elected position or the head of an organization, you know, the best thing you can do to nurture that side of it is make sure during hiring processes or when you're bidding out for different contracts that you consciously seek out a diverse pool of candidates. And not just relying on the pool that you use every time, but you have to be mindful of seeing where your deficiencies are, where your lack of diversity is, and then seeking out those candidates, right? And that doesn't mean you're just going out and giving people jobs for the sake of diversity, right? But what it does mean is that you understand that there's a talent pool out there that's untapped, and you want to be the one to exploit that. Right. It was funny. I think I was talking to somebody the other day, and I'm a Celtics fan. I grew up a Celtics fan. My granddad was a Celtics fan.
I won't hold that against you.
And my granddad was a Celtics fan because of Bill Russell, and because the Celtics gave Bill Russell the opportunity to be the first black head coach or player coach. Mm-hmm. And he always and the Celtics back in the day had the most black players on the team. Right. When Red Auerbach was a little younger. When we were kids in the 80s, the Celtics were looked at as quote unquote the white team, mm-hmm. right? But all Red Auerbach was doing is he was exploiting talent pools that other people weren't exploiting. If teams weren't going to have black players on their team, that was fine with Red Auerbach.
Right.
He'll take them,
right,
and he'll win with them,
right?
Right? Or if, in the 80s, if he found some players that maybe weren't as coveted, he'll take them and he'll win with them. And I think that's what we have to do as business leaders, and that's what we have to do as legislators. We've got to go into those talent pools that are under-recruited, underutilized, and go in there with the intention of pulling out those diamonds, because they're there. They are there. We just got to get into there, and we got to keep it at top of mind. You know, I think, you know, there is such a thing as that implicit bias,
right,
or unconscious bias.
Right.
And we all have it, no matter what you look like or where you're from. The difference is when you know you have that and you keep it top of mind and say, I'm going to seek out talent and organizations in areas that I normally don't, that's when you can break down those barriers, right? And I think legislators, you know, there's a lot of talk about around the state level around giving more minority and women-owned businesses access to some of the bidding for the contracts and things like that. And we can do the same things at the county level. Also, you know, making sure we include, you know, union businesses that have union workers, giving them fair access to these type of bids and contracts as well, right? Because, you know, they're busting their butts every day to stick up for workers' rights as well. So, you know, just being as intentional as possible. I think a lot of people try to ignore the fact that there are different disparities, right? We can't do that. You know, this is 2019. We're past the point of denial. Now we have to do something about it.
Right.
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 So.
And I think a byproduct of someone like yourself running for office is that particularly some a younger black brother running actually see somebody and be like, man, he looks a lot like me.
Yeah.
And he's running. So what would you tell somebody that's, you know, saying, how do I get into politics? What's the best way to do it? Like, because I mean, it's inspiring to see somebody, you know, a young black man running for office, particularly in the area that you're running for. Doesn't happen all the time. So
I'm gonna say two things. And this goes back to a conversation that I've had many times over the past 2 years. It's not good enough to have minority candidates running in areas that are majority minority.
Right, right.
It's not good enough. It's not good enough for us to support minority candidates that are running in majority minority districts. True equality, true representation comes when we support minority candidates that are running in majority white districts, districts that aren't Democrat friendly, districts that aren't as diverse as they could be, right? And because that means they're running and winning on their ideas and who they are, not just because they're, you know, the most popular minority figure in that area, right? And I think that's number one. And I think that's something we can do as people, right? Number two is what I would tell an individual. The most powerful word in your vocabulary is yes. I didn't join the Henrico Democratic Committee until 4 years ago in 2015. Every time they would ask me to do something, I'd just say yes. And then they'd ask me to do something else, and I'd say yes. And pretty soon I was chair of the committee because I continued to say yes. When I was thinking about going back and coaching T-ball this summer, and some people approached me about running for supervisor, and they thought I had some good ideas and I would be a good candidate, I said yes. The most powerful word, because some people, they'll get asked to do something, and because they haven't done it before, or they might not fit the typical profile of someone that's already in a role like that, they'll say, oh, I don't know, maybe in a couple of years, maybe after I get a little bit more experience or have a little bit more money or my family life, you know, kind of dies down a little bit. No, you just got to say yes. Put yourself out there on faith. Know that he has a plan for you. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, good things will happen and doors will open up. And that's what I would tell. Don't let anybody tell you that, oh, you're too young. You don't have the experience. You don't have the money. I had somebody ask me that one time last year. They said, well, what are you going to do about the money? I said, well, I guess I'm going to just ask a bunch of people for some. I guess like that's all you can do.
Right.
But don't let those perceived barriers keep you from doing it. And if you don't succeed the first time, do it again. And if you don't succeed the second time, do it again. And you keep doing it because you're going to gain. You learn more by failure than you do by through success. Mm-hmm. So if you don't win that first time or you don't win that second time, that's great. Because that third time, you're going to have your campaign tight. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to have, or if you start that one business and it fades away and you start that second one, you're gonna have that second business plan, that second organization tight, mm-hmm. way tighter than you had that first one, right? So you just gotta say yes and do it.
Yeah.
And don't let, I'll tell you one other thing. Don't let not seeing someone that looks like you in a position dissuade you from seeking that position. Mm-hmm. I had someone one time say, you know, how did you know you wanted to do that? There's no one that looks like us or looks like you or in the position that you are that's done that before. How did you know that you wanted to do it? I said, well, because, you know, that's a goal. That's something that you can do. And why would I let that stop me?
Right.
You know, like, don't, just because you don't see yourself, see somebody who looks like you in that position, that should make you want to do it more, not less, right? Because there's still all kinds of barriers that we have to break down, all kinds of mountains that we have to climb. And it takes those people that aren't afraid of failing, that are just going to say yes to achieve those things. And, you know, and if you shoot for the stars, you can hit the moon, right? Like, it's not always going to work out like you think it's going to work out, but it's going to open doors. I mean, you know, we worked at Capital One together. You know, a lot of folks up there that we worked with that we knew are doing awesome things because they said yes.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. And I'm thinking about, like, you know, when we were in the working with the, you know, the African American Associate Network and the Magellan Program and all those things that, you know, they pulled us into, and we just said yes on top of our regular jobs. And then those experiences lead to opportunities and finding your passion
and relationships
and relationships,
yep. Which is a big thing. And I think particularly now in politics, man, you're seeing more of not the guy that's been in politics for 20 years that's, you know, going for re-election and winning. It's more so people that have, you know, stomping, you know, in the neighborhoods, know the neighborhood, have those relationships with people, have been out there doing that community building and meeting people. And people say, hey, if you can do this, if you can help us with these small issues here and you help them with these issues all over here, why aren't you good enough to run for office? And those people are actually running for office. Well, and I love to see that.
The key is the old guard, when people used to run for office, it was about, hey, my dad was an elected official and he introduced me to his network of supporters. Right. And then I ran and I won and I became an elected official. I think we need to flip the model. Elected officials need to come from the advocacy community. Mm-hmm. They need to me, when I'm looking to vote for someone, I look to vote for people who have past experiences that were being champions and advocates for other people. And it just so happened that led them to running for office. Like, what have you done in your career that you weren't getting paid for, that nobody was looking at, that you were doing for the good of your community or your peers, your folks with like experiences? Like, if you're a champion for those folks and you're doing things out of the limelight, then that's when I'm gonna vote for you.
Right.
But when you're having just photo ops and your only qualification for running for office is that you have a family member that ran for office, right, or you had a, you know, or you have a lot of money, then I don't get excited about, I don't get excited about that.
My motto is that you should always try to think beyond yourself. And those politicians that are thinking beyond themselves, that are out there doing things to help people just for the sake of helping them,
yep,
not because they're looking to get something back in return or anything like that. Those are the politicians that you want there. And you know.
But the key after that, after those folks get elected, is them not forgetting. Mm-hmm. They're not forgetting where they came from. I told my wife, I said her responsibility in this whole journey is to always keep me grounded, and when I'm spouting BS, to call me out on it, or when I feel like I'm getting too big for my britches, to call me out on it. Because I think that happens to politicians a lot. You know, people are telling them how awesome they are, they get elected, they're in these important positions, they have the honorable behind their names, mm-hmm, and then they kind of forget why they got into, mm-hmm, you know, into the business. I was telling a story earlier. A campaign is a slog, and I've been at it for a long time now with the Senate campaign and this campaign. And you know, you sometimes, when you're tired after you worked a regular job and you're going to campaign events and you're thinking, oh my goodness, what in the world was I thinking, you know? And then I went to a meeting about a month ago, and it was with a bunch of my friends that I'd made through my advocacy work with the MS Society. I didn't say this earlier, I was chair of government relations for the MS Society. So my job was to go to the General Assembly and to Capitol Hill and to advocate on behalf of folks with chronic illnesses and disabilities. And through that, I would meet folks that were representing other organizations that were working on similar issues, and we'd partner, right? And so one day I took the day off from work, and I went to a workshop with a lot of the friends that I'd made throughout my advocacy journey. And my mental state of mind when I went into that meeting and when I came out of that meeting were night and day. Because when I came out of that meeting, it reminded me why it's so important for people who are advocates to be running for office. Because all these pieces of legislation at the federal, state, and county level, they affect real people. And you can't get jaded by the political process when things don't seem like they're going your way, or it's hard, or it's tiring. Because at the end of the day, you're truing back to why you started to run. And for me, being around those other advocates, folks with advanced stage rheumatoid arthritis that can barely move, folks that had limbs amputated, folks that were cancer survivors, and every year they're going to the General Assembly, or periodically they're going to DC to tell their incredibly personal story, to paint a picture for a legislator at any level, to have them join and sign on to legislation that makes their lives directly better. And these people aren't getting paid. They aren't getting, people aren't asking them for interviews. They're doing it because they want to make an impact. Mm-hmm. And when I left that meeting, because I saw me, right? I saw why I got into politics, what led me down this path. And it was like it's kind of like a rebirth, honestly. And that's no exaggeration. I came out of there excited and like battery was recharged and ready to go, because I saw why it was so important and the people who I'd be speaking for and advocating for. And that's a powerful thing. It's a powerful thing.
Yeah, I just love the authenticity of it, man. Of what you're saying, you can tell that it's deeply personal to you. Why you got into politics, and again, I go back to it. I just love seeing people like myself doing things that we haven't done, and forging into territories where we say, yes, you said it earlier. Yes, people that look like me haven't done this before, but why? Or I don't care, I'm going to do it because I think I have the right message, I'm the right person to do it, and I'm here to help people. So, man, I just want to say, again, thank you for coming on here.
Thank
man.
You for having me. This was fun.
We definitely do it again. You know, yeah. You're welcome to come back at any time. My illustrious co-host is here today, Mariah Lachey. She's had a personal issue. I know she definitely wanted to be a part of it. She's, you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier. She's a younger millennial, so her questions are probably a bit more pointed towards and skewed towards.
Isn't it crazy though? So Pew Research says that a millennial starts at 81. Right, that's when they use for their research as the official cutoff, and I was born in June of 81, so I kind of feel like I'm more of a Gen Xer than a millennial, because we grew up, everybody didn't have a cell phone.
Right, you
didn't have a computer until I was in high school, you know, and it's just so different. Now you see, you know, younger politicians, like, you know, the prime example is AOC, mm-hmm. right? Tweeting everything, Instagram and everything, Facebook and everything. And it's like, and I'm still like, you know, older, and I'm sitting up there like, if I press send, it's out there forever.
Right.
And let me triple check. And millennials, though, they're just like, boom.
Because it's what they grew up in. So, yes, I might put something out there that's wrong, but so is everybody else. Everybody's putting stuff out there that's wrong.
And
so,
me, I'm triple checking. I'm like, I'm like, hey, can you look at this and make sure everything
right,
is
very skeptical of information being out there.
What's my mama gonna think?
Right. That's very important. I definitely, you know, if you get a chance to come back and sit down with her, she's very passionate about community development and urban planning. She actually has a background in that. She teaches at VCU.
That's awesome.
So definitely love to have you back, man, but I enjoyed it, man.
Well, let's come back closer to the campaign, and we can talk about, you know, how things are progressing up and down the ticket. I think one plug I will put in for people is that in Virginia, we have elections every single year,
mm-hmm.
and there is no break. There is no, you know, time out. Every November, you've got to go to the polls. And politicians have a habit of saying that this election is the most important election in our lifetime. But if you think about it, this time is probably true.
Right.
And the reason, not only is it because, you know, of the person that we have in the White House, and your state and county level officials being kind of firewalls to keep some of those awful policies that they're concocting up there from getting down to you personally. But it's also redistricting's coming up at the end of the decade. And we all know that throughout political history, politicians have chosen their voters instead of their voters choosing the politicians because of gerrymandering and how they draw the lines. And so on the county level, we'll draw new lines for board of supervisors districts. At the state level, they'll draw new lines for the House and the Senate. So if you want free and fair election, if you really want your vote to count, coming out to the election in November is crucial. It's crucial because at the state level, there will be legislation that comes up around redistricting commissions and taking that out of the state legislature's hands and having a nonpartisan redistricting commission, which is extremely important. right? And so we need to come out and elect officials that are going to sign on to that and vote yes. And then at the county level, we'll be drawing lines at the turn of the decade, right? And the next, you know, it's 2019. The next election on the county level will be 2023. So we'll be, whoever's elected is going to be drawing those lines and it'll set the table for the next decade. So it really is, I mean, if you think about it, the most important election, at least of the past 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. And just because there's no presidential or congressional or governor on the ballot doesn't mean that we can stay home and take a break. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I encourage everybody to kind of stay involved and come out to vote, research your candidate. Every candidate has a website. Mine is marcusjones.com, MarcusJones.com. You can check me out, but every candidate will have their website. They'll have their Facebook page. Research them, check them out. And if they align with your values, then vote for them. But not only vote for them. So here's one thing I'm gonna tell folks. I hate money in politics. Because it leads to only the wealthy being able to fund and finance a campaign. But at the end of the day, we have to play with the hand we're dealt. And that's just the situation we're in now. We need money. And so if you like a candidate, you have to invest in that candidate. You can't just, it's not good enough. And you know, it's not good enough to sit back and say, I'm gonna vote for that person. If you really want a person to win, you have to invest in them. And in investing in them is what you can afford, right? If it's a dollar, if it's $5, if it's $25, if it's $2,000, what you can afford, you need to invest in the candidates that you want to see elected, because that's how they get their message out. That's how they pay their campaign staff. That's how they send you all that mail. That's how they, you know, maintain their lists and talk to voters and have events. So, you know, I think people newer to the political process, I love people that feel like that they want to get out and knock doors and make phone calls, and that's important. But until we get campaign finance reform and get some of the money out of politics, you're really going to have to invest in the candidates you like at every level to allow them to be independent of special interest groups. Because if you're not investing in them, XYZ Corporation with their PAC is going to invest in them. Right. Big rich billionaire that doesn't want taxes is going to invest in them. Right. So I would rather, if it's me, I'd rather get 100 donations of $50 than one donation of $5,000. Because then I can go and I can make decisions based on my heart. I'm not worried about funding a campaign, right? And I think if you look, you know, not to go partisan on you.
Oh, we don't mind.
But if you look at the difference, especially at the state and the county level, Republican fundraising versus Democratic fundraising, Republicans will have 10 people that give big bucks, Democrats will have 200 people that give small dollar donations. That's how we as Democrats raise money and try to keep special interest out of politics, is a lot of small dollar donations. So if you see a candidate that you like, hopefully you like me, marcusjones.com, but if you see another candidate that you like, invest in that candidate. You're not giving them anything. You're investing in them, and when they go to when they get elected and they're in office, you hold them accountable, because you've invested in them. You hold them accountable to keep their promises, to stay true to themselves, remember where they came from, and keep moving forward. And that's how we correct our democracy. That's why how we put things in the right direction, right? Yeah. So I get off my soapbox now, because I get a little bit passionate about that part.
I appreciate it, man. I you listen to our show, we definitely harp on it, man. Get out and vote. Particularly these local elections are the important ones. We talk about, you feel like you're not a part of the political process. Here you have a candidate, he's sitting right here in my house talking to me. All right, you don't get that anywhere else pretty much.
Not Mark Warner is not gonna come to your house 9 times out of 10.
So get out and vote, support these candidates, learn more about the candidates. And then the last point I make is tell other people about it. When you find a candidate you like that you know supporting things that are going to help your community, share that message so that other people can invest in them as well. And that's how you actually win elections, man. No, we're coming up on an hour here. You know, with you with having a family, I know how it's important. I don't want to keep any longer than I have to. But again, if you any events you got coming up, please shout them out now. Let the listeners know.
So you know what we're doing now? So here's the thing, right? Right now we are focused on knocking doors, talking to as many real people as possible, and making phone calls, right? Knocking doors and making phone calls. The old school, you know, moneyed way is to have a bunch of big time fundraisers. We want to get out and talk to the people, because any politician that tells you that they know everything and they have all the answers is lying.
Oh, for sure.
They're lying. They need to be out there. And what I'm trying to do is get out there, talk to people. The first thing when I knock on the door or make a phone call, I ask is, what do you think is the top issue that the Henrico County Board of Supervisors needs to address over the next 4 years? That's the first question I ask. Because it doesn't matter what I think. I have one man's perspective, right? But you live in this county too. And you have things that you see that I might not see, right? So when someone comes to your door campaigning, open the door, listen to them, tell them what your issues are, right? And then see what they say. And that's how you decide. That's how I decide, at least, who I'm going to support. So what I'll be doing over the next couple months, I'll be making phone calls. My campaign manager have me chained to a phone every day. We'll be knocking doors in the heat and in the rain and in the cold. And we'll be trying to spread the word. But what I will say is, you know, if you like what you heard, go to my webpage, marcusjones.com, MarcusJones.com, and invest in me, because, you know, I can't do this without the support of the community. And so, you know, I can give, you know, the sweat, but there's things that you absolutely, my campaign manager is looking at me right now. He's like, yeah, I've got to eat and he got to be able to pay me. So I can't do it by myself. So if you could invest in me, I really appreciate it.
Great. Well, again, thank you for coming. We'll end the show with any shout outs that you have. We always ask our guests any shout outs. Podcast. So,
oh man, shout out.
Shout out.
Well, first of all, I want to shout out my wife. She has been a saint over the past 2 years.
Good call. Very smart, man.
When I've got to go to this meeting and that meeting, she is always there. You know, they always say, you know, you have to have that partner in your life that not only balances you out but holds you up, right? And she definitely does that for me. Also shout out really to all the other candidates out here. I know sometimes, you know, it gets hard. Sometimes you go home and you look in the mirror and you're like, why in the world did I do this? But we all out there trying to do good work. So shout out to Deborah Rodman, Skylar Van Volkenberg, Rodney Willett, you know, and all Melissa Dart, all the folks up and down the ticket. We got 3 more months left. November's coming fast, and we're gonna put in that work, and we're gonna make a positive impact on our community. So shout out to all them, and shout out to you listeners, man. Like this supporting. Efforts like this, podcasts like this, where we're allowed to speak our own truths and get out our messages, is so important. And I know, Tony, when I seen this posted on Facebook, like literally, it was literally 30 seconds later when I sent you the message to say, hey man, you got to have me on as a guest. Not because I wanted to promote myself, but I understand how tough, how much effort it takes to put this stuff together, and how you want to bring quality content to your users, your listeners, every single time out. And I support this man, support his podcast, support, you know, this is, you know, when we're trying to do big things and get and speak our own truths and tell our own stories. And the only way that we can do that if we have folks that support us. So man, please continue to listen to this podcast, because I think it's a great thing.
I again appreciate it. Appreciate that message in particular. I love doing what I do. I love having brothers come in and talk that are doing positive things. Always, you know, like I said earlier, my thing is, man, you know, try to do something beyond yourself, and you're definitely doing that. So again, best of luck to you.
Thank you.
All of the people out there, go out and register to vote. If you haven't already, research your candidates. And then once you find one that you like, spread the message, man. Kudos to everybody that's listening. Best of luck to Marcus and everybody that's on the ticket with him. And again, appreciate you guys listening. And until next time, this is Just Where I Articulate with T-Von and
Marcus Jones.
All right. Have a good one.
You've been listening to the Yes. Don't stop. We're Articulate Podcast with Mariah Lachey and T-Von.